Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club.
Welcome to the Commonwealth Club. I'm George Hammond, Chair of the Humanities Forum, which put together tonight's program. And tonight we have Alex Scott, the author of Oldest San Francisco. And we have Ruth Carlson coming back to the Commonwealth Club. She was here several years ago. It was a very popular show. She's written another book. It was Secret San Francisco last time. This time it's Secret California. So it's a great place to have a staycation. You know, California, San Francisco. Just think, well, I'm not going to mention any other locations because, you know, they'll just be feeling jealous. But there are plenty of places where you really don't want to have a staycation. But here, there's so many things going on, and both of these authors are travel writers, and they have dug in and found not only the background history, but all kinds of really interesting things to do when you want to stay. So let's start with you, Ruth. You're our expert here, and you've also been here before. And what is it that you want to present first? I know you have some presentation first, right?
Yes. Alec and I were going to just each talk a little bit about our books. And
right.
First of all, thank you guys.
Absolutely.
Thanks for coming. And it's always an honor to be here. I spent most of my writing career doing international travel. And then we had this thing called the pandemic. I think we remember that. And I couldn't go anywhere. And so that's when I focused on my favorite state and wrote about Secret California, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. And with internet and the Instagram, a lot of people are saying, are there any secrets anymore, really? and it was a challenge to uncover quirky spots. Uh-huh. But I found some that Native Californians, how many people here are Native Californians? Aha. Uh-huh. I thought so. Quite a few. But I found some that even they were surprised about. Like, did you know, and maybe you do, maybe you don't, there's a troll hidden under the Bay Bridge to protect drivers. Whale excrement is a bestseller at the state's, actually the country's only perfume museum. One city has another city hidden underneath it. There are campsites you can go to right in the middle of San Francisco. You can take a double-decker tour bus ride of the Neon in Los Angeles. And the Gold Country has this fantastic Sherlock Holmes Museum. So I can tell you more secrets later, but I know Alec has some to tell you about Oldest San Francisco.
Sure. I'm not a native Californian and moved here in 2008, but had fallen for the city earlier when I visited a friend and they had a family crisis, so it was just me with their powder blue VW bug, bad brakes, and the city, and went to a lot of the places that I ended up writing about. Cafe Trieste, the oldest espresso bar in the West. City Lights, of course, the first bookstore specializing in paperbacks, and it had categories I'd never seen before. Stolen Continents was a whole section, and bought on the road. Like Ruth, I've often written about places far away, and during COVID, I took the chance to sort of deepen my knowledge of San Francisco and write about this cross-section of things from the oldest blue jeans, the oldest rainbow flag. We have a lot of social services that were pioneered here, so we had the first free public health clinic, non-sectarian. Of course, the Haight-Ashbury Clinic that helped minister to the collateral damage of the so-called Summer of Love, and we had the first the world's first suicide hotline because we have the bridge, and that's been something that we've worked on. So it was this mix of stuff you'd expect: Tadich Grill, the oldest restaurant, the oldest building, Mission Dolores. And then maybe some things you didn't expect, like the oldest auto shop or the oldest hat maker. And so that's sort of, in general terms, the sort of slice that it cuts through the city. So thank you all for coming, and thank you for having us.
Awesome. My pleasure. So you mentioned that you came here to visit a friend and ended up coming back and staying. So and we already asked how many were Native Californians. So how many people here came to meet a friend and ended up staying in California? couple more. Okay. So one of the things that we can do is we can go into a little bit more detail about some of the stuff that you talked about first. And we have a game for everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have
trivia.
a little trivia.
Are prizes.
Trivia game with prizes. And so make sure you're listening carefully to everything we say.
And we have some fortune cookies from the old fortune cookie maker there. The fortunes inside will surprise you. They're sort of naked self promotion. I did all these potted histories, and one of the ones I did was the Commonwealth Club. I thought since we're here, I would speak a bit. You all probably know a lot of this, but I thought by way of that, I'd just speak of a couple of the things that I put in that entry. So I spoke to your fearless leader, Gloria Duffy, who said, in a nation as polarized as ours now is, the club's mission to foster respectful public dialogue about important subjects is as vital as it's ever been. Talked a bit about the times when there were no women members, and then the move to that. And it was surprising to me how many San Francisco institutions fought tooth and nail, and how recently that was. That wasn't the case with the Commonwealth Club, but with others, I was surprised at that.
It's interesting because San Francisco had some of the first, you know, co-ed stuff, too.
Yes.
Going back to the 1850s, but even so, we still had another part of the society had the separation and kept it. So
yeah.
It's a very interesting history from that point of view.
It's that interesting mix of which people in San Francisco understand of a very progressive in some senses, and then sometimes the very traditional in other senses. And of course the German beer hall Schroeder's famously turned away a female diner for lunch who turned out to be the head of the ACLU in Northern
mistake.
California. So that was what they call a big mistake. It was interesting to me to realize that FDR had announced some of the early plans for the New Deal here. And less edifying maybe, but another bombshell that Dan Quayle had his Murphy Brown rant here about how dangerous it was for a woman to raise a child on her own, and that Nikita Khrushchev had been speaking here
without his shoe though.
No, it was just each of the entries sort of digs in a little bit. Often you'll know things, but for me, the way my memory works, it's nice to be reminded of them. So
you added the story about the Longshoremen's Association, and I think a lot of people kind of know that one, but it's also good to repeat because the club, when we bought this and revised it and everything, the wood here, the wood panels everywhere. Is the original wood from this thing redone and refinished so that it could be put up as part of the history, because there's this Longshoremen Association, which is important history. So why don't you tell what you found about that?
I'm glad that it's memorialized. Mm-hmm. Of course, a violent work stoppage among the workers in the port, and then a raid on their union headquarters on Bloody Thursday, in which three of the membership were killed, and then a huge general strike here. And it didn't result in changes immediately, but within 5 or 10 years, a lot of the increases in pay, better working conditions came through. And so it was an example, I think, of a terrible sort of set of events, but one in which the results were eventually progress.
Right. Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, Dianne Feinstein was a big proponent of getting women into these clubs. Once they realized that some of these clubs were on city land, they said, no, you have to let women in, like mm-hmm. South End Rowing Club and some of the other ones. And so that was like in the early 80s. So she was a big leader in that.
Yeah. And Ruth had a bit to give you a flavor of her book. She had something called the CIA, not the CIA that you're thinking of. And so I thought, would you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. Well, since Halloween's right around the corner, I thought it'd be fun to start talking about this scary place in La La Land. It's actually kind of scary.
All
La La Land's kind of scary by itself. But the CIA, or the California Institute of Abnormal Arts. And your first clue, this is not an everyday business, is the huge skull that hangs out above these massive red doors. And once you go inside the Barnum of Burbank, as they call him, he always wears a top hat, he dresses all in black, and he tells visitors not to be afraid, and he laughs demonically. But in this dark, cavernous space, red lanterns guide you to the tiki bar, where he'll make you any drink you want, including the witch's brew. And he's an actor, writer, producer, and he loves showing off these offbeat treasures that he has. It's in Burbank. I don't know the exact address, I'd have to look up, but if you look it up, you'll see it.
It's
there you go. Yeah. There you go.
Thanks for the ad.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll get your money later. But some of the things he has an embalmed clown from the early 1900s. He used to be a mortician. I forgot to mention that. He has a portrait of a French royal, and then next to it, the arm that he lost, tragically lost his arm. And there's this myth that if you make a wish, then your wish will come true in 24 hours. But if you take a photo, this is for all the Instagrammers out there, you're going to be cursed forever. So now you know.
That clown will come after you.
yeah. And then he has a painting of a woman. Supposedly her eyes move when you move. I didn't see that, but some supposedly young people stole it and they quickly returned it. And Carl Cruz, like, I wonder what she did to them. He has footprints of Sasquatch. He's got a bear that growls when you walk past and the eyes light up. And Sacha Baron Cohen, I'm sure you guys have heard of him. He thought the CIA was such a great place. He had his movie premiere there for a Borat subsequent movie film. It's a very unique spot.
You mentioned Sasquatch.
Yes.
And in your book, there's also the Bigfoot Museum in Felton. I don't know how many people have been there. There's a Bigfoot Museum in Felton. The reason that I'm mentioning it is because I donated something to that museum.
Oh, you did?
That they have, yes.
What did you donate?
A movie that one of my clients created, and one of the characters is obsessed with Sasquatch. And so I happened to be going there. We liked Felton and then Santa Cruz, and so we were there. And we went to the Bigfoot Museum, and I told him about it. And I said, here, you want a copy of the movie? Oh, absolutely. So he put it in his collection.
No, it's fascinating. I mean, I lived in Santa Cruz for like 20 years, but I never went to the Sasquatch Museum in Felton. Yeah. But he's very serious about this and definitely feels that if you talk to him, he'll talk for hours about how he believes they're out there. And who knows? But it's a very quirky, fun little museum.
Yeah.
And it's still open. I checked because I thought some of these things might be closed after COVID, but it's still open.
Still open, yeah. And it doesn't take that much time to get through the whole museum.
And one time they stole one of the statues out front, one of the Bigfoot statues.
Right, right.
And so the cops were saying, this is not a joke. We are on the hunt for Bigfoot. Bigfoot is out there. Bigfoot somewhere. And somebody then returned it.
Yeah. it was a teenager prank, probably.
Yes, probably. Yeah, yeah.
You have all these uncommitted felons that you're writing about. They steal and then they get remorse.
Yeah, I do, don't I?
Nice, yeah.
Don't I?
So one of the things that I was really happy to get to write about was my parents were very conventional people, but they were in love with the road music of the 60s. And so they would love, if we hadn't been around, they would love to have taken to the road. But alas, they were very responsible people and they didn't just leave us. So it was nice to go to the studio in the Tenderloin, where a lot of the soundtrack of the 60s and 70s was laid down. Fleetwood Mac was recording there in the 70s, Creedence in the 70s, and everyone in the 60s. So I just wrote, this is just the beginning of the, of that entry.
Mm-hmm.
So, through these doors have walked many of the great music makers of the past half century. Here, CCR warned about a bad moon rising. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young told parents to teach their children well. And Grace Slick asked emphatically, don't you want somebody to love? Growing up in Oregon, the studio's founder, Wally Heider, always loved music, but his sax playing was poor enough that once a band leader asked him to turn his instrument away from the microphone. And so he went to law school, as one does. And as a former lawyer, I can say, well, I shouldn't say that with a very distinguished lawyer on the stage with me and some very distinguished ones in the crowd. But anyway, But even so, the music wouldn't let him be. So the tall, stutter-prone man apprenticed at a big L.A. studio, becoming a specialist in mobile recording. Heider was one of those who captured the epical Monterey Pop Festival in 1967 and is shown in film reels of the event, rushing on stage to rescue some valuable microphones from The Who's Pete Townsend and Keith Moon, intent on trashing them with their guitars. Many of the stars who emerged at that festival became friends with Heider, and when he started the studio, they came, they played, they conquered, creating the so-called San Francisco sound. The big studios elsewhere tended to have regimented schedules, lots of rules, no touching the master board, no using the echo chamber after five. Here, really anything went. David Crosby entertained girlfriends upstairs while Slick passed out on a couch, her double-parked Aston Martin accruing parking tickets outside. And yet, even with this freedom, perhaps because of this freedom, the hits kept on coming. If Carlos Santana wanted the studio lit in red to get him in the right place to serve up a guitar riff, it would be done. Heider retired in the late 70s, selling what is now, under owner Michael Ward, the oldest remaining multi-studio setup in the city. Even with Heider gone, the beat didn't stop. And I'll just mention a couple of the acts that have recorded there since. Here, the Dead Kennedys recorded legendary punk squawks. Mm-hmm. Rapper Tupac did his first solo album. And contemporary artists as diverse as Green Day, Rufus Wainwright, mm-hmm. and Cake followed where the Grateful Dead, the Byrds, and Van Morrison long ago led. Yes, still open and busy. They have people coming in on rumors of San Francisco's creative death are not true. People record on Christmas and Thanksgiving, and the young fellow who manages it said he could be seeing music every night if he wanted to out there. So
what's the address on Hyde Street?
I have it in the book. I have it in the book, but I do not have it
memorized. Yes.
Yeah. So,
I thought another fascinating part about your book was the fact that you covered the history of some companies, their original history, and there's some great institutions here, but you don't know what they were like 100 years ago when they were getting started, and they are quite a bit different.
Yeah, I write a lot about tech because when in San Francisco, and I liked that spirit of entrepreneurialism and trial and fail, that's been here. I mean, of course, it's part of business, but it's been here quite deeply early on. You know, Levi Strauss not just taking out the patent, but slowly conquering the world with those genes. And
yeah, it's fascinating, all the little details.
Thank you.
We'll talk about a couple more. So,
well, I seem to be on. I just realized I talked about the CIA. In my book, I found a lot of these people I wrote about, or a lot of the things I wrote about, were people that like to collect things. And sometimes the spouse would say, get it out of the house. And so they would have to do their own museum.
That's how a lot of museums start that are small.
Yeah. So I'll read just a brief, not the whole thing, but a thing about Felicity, California, which is the center of the earth. And New York, Paris, London, San Francisco, as much as they'd all like to think they're the center of the earth, have really bad news. That belongs to Felicity, California. It's a desert town in the middle of nowhere on the edge of Arizona. And it's not the financial, fashion, cultural, or tech epicenter of the world. But France and Imperial County, California have declared it the world's midpoint. And that happened because one very charismatic and persistent man, Jacques-André Estelle, he created Felicity. And he convinced these governments to make this proclamation. He grew up in Paris, very Renaissance man, started the first parachute company in the U.S., wrote a children's book about Felicity, and he's continually adding to his museum of history written in granite in Felicity. The facts are in question. But if you have a problem, then you have to take it up with the mayor. And that would be Istel, because he was unanimously elected to this post for his lifetime by the town's two residents. That was him and his wife, Felicity. And he said it was cheaper to name the town after her than to buy her a fur coat.
Right.
But besides the history in granite, he has a replica of a chapel in Brittany. He has an outdoor staircase from the Eiffel Tower. He has a lot of money, and I guess nowhere else to spend it. A maze where you can put, you know, down the names of your loved ones if you want, your deceased loved ones, and a post office in case you want to send a letter from the center of the world. If you take the tour, you'll enter a pyramid, and you'll get a certificate proving that you went there. And he discovered it when he was based at Camp Pendleton during the Korean War. And he says working on it keeps him out of trouble, so... It's a very interesting, fascinating place. It's
due to that one guy.
Yes, what of a
it's
guy.
It's very interesting to say it's the midpoint of the world, you know, because it's not a sphere.
Well, he said it could be anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but he convinced France, the country of France, to say that it was the center and Imperial County. So
it was clearly useful that he was born in Paris.
Yes, that helps. Yeah, that definitely helps.
Well, we have. These are we just did a couple of montages to by way of preface for the Q&A in terms of anything you want to find out about. That's the production of Tosca. The opera company celebrated its 100th last year, and it was great to learn about its former head putting Leontine Price in at the last minute into a role that she subsequently owned. That's sort of a classic story. That's the inside of the dome at Temple Sherith Israel. And I wrote about the two oldest Jewish communities of faith coming out of the same group in the Gold Rush. Wrote about the oldest motel, which has all these sort of hold-up stories out of Tarantino. and the way the husband and wife who tell those stories is just... delightful. And then we have the oldest senior center in the country, and Life magazine featured it back in the day. And the sort of revolutionary idea at the time was make people feel useful, not shuffleboard, but like teach each other courses and learn about computers and, you know. And that is the legendary Bill Russell, who played basketball varsity for the oldest university, the Jesuit-founded University of San Francisco. Those are some retro hat boxes at the Paul's Hat Works, the oldest hatterer in the city, for a long time run by a succession of amazingly crafty men. And then a woman, Abby Dwella, took it over recently. And she not only can make a great fedora, she wears the hell out of them. And and then that's the oldest cinema, which its general manager said it's had more lives than a cat. It showed blue movies for a while. It showed everything. So that's for the Q&A in case you have any questions about any of those. And then, whoops, back. And here's Ruth's montage.
I feel like a real slacker after the things you said.
Well, I don't know. It looks to me like you bought a hat at Paul's.
I cannot believe I have not been there. It's awful. No, as soon as your book came out, I'm like, I have got to get there. No, I love hats. Yeah. They call me the hat lady. So, this is, they call it the Tacky Titans up there in the left-hand corner. It's these fiberglass figures. They're also called muffler men. And in Hayward, it's, of all places, this glass company has a collection of them. And you could just drive by and you might get whiplash when you see these things. But they're very cool. He has a ton. And the next one is Hand of the Land. That's Napa. Gordon Huther is this... artist who was born there, famous, and it became very controversial. He meant it to be an homage to the agricultural workers, but some people took offense at it. So it was not put downtown, but instead it's in front of his gallery, which you can visit, and it's definitely worth visiting. He works on huge art installations, and you can see some of the smaller versions of them, but also some of the big things he's working on. That's, of course, everybody knows the Doggy Diner, but you may not know where this one is. There's some in Treasure Island. There's a guy in North Beach who owns three and takes them around. He had them in Golden Gate Park. Yes, John. But this is actually in Port Costa. And I don't know how many of you have been there, but that is such a fabulous find. This town is just kind of in the middle of nowhere. Their unofficial mayor is this musician, Mitch Polzak, and it's just, it's across from Benicia, next to Martinez, but a lot of people don't know about it. An old granary has been made into a big music place, but they also have all sorts of artwork there, and they have a doggy diner. That one I can't tell you about because that's on the quiz. That was my bad. I put that in. This is a rock garden, which sounds like an oxymoron, but it's in Encinitas, and this neighbor would walk by every day, and he couldn't stand the fact that the empty lot was filled with weeds and trash, and so he started cleaning it up. Turns out it was owned by the city, and they said, you can't do that. You can't touch that. So he would go at night. He called himself a ninja gardener. And he would take rocks from the ocean, the nearby ocean and the beach, and put them there to make pathways. And then somebody came by one day and painted on it. And he's like, oh, that's it. I'm going to have 1,000 rocks with 1,000 paintings. Now he has 7,000. Everybody that walks down to the beach, they stop, and he has art, he has paint, and you paint a rock. It's a very cool story. And then the last two are actually the same place. It's up in Boonville, which was news to me. You guys might know this, but they have a secret language, and they're trying to preserve it. Only like 12 people still know it, and they're trying to keep it going. It's called, let's see, what is it called? Yes. Yes, you know. Okay. Bootling.
Are you one of the speakers?
All 12 of them are here.
Yeah, hey, I was going to say.
I'll take any help I can get.
But that we weren't expecting. This was supposed to be secret.
That's okay. I'll take any...
Formerly secret.
Any help I can get, but it's fascinating. Apparently there was a high society woman in San Francisco, and she was with child, and she wasn't married. And so her parents sent her up there. This is, you know, way back in the day. And the women working there with her, they didn't want to talk about her behind her back, and so they made up this language so they could talk about it. And then the men liked it, so they picked up on it. And so, unfortunately, now there's not too many people, but they're trying to keep it going. And every day on the radio station, they have another bootling word that they say. And the Anderson Valley Brewing Company puts it on their label. They put different words. And so they're trying to bring it back. Yeah. Anyway.
Bring back bootling. So we can either do more questions.
Let's do
the quiz at the end.
Let's do a little bit more and then do the quiz.
Yeah.
So you told about Old St. Mary's, which is a great story all by itself. That's the church that's right near Chinatown. But what was interesting was I didn't realize the Barbary Coast was right across the street. So why don't you tell the story about the contrast between those two organizations?
Yeah, well, often in the days before you could advertise on billboards and stuff, the various brothels located near there would call out to people going to, people would lean out of the top windows and call out to those going to church that they might spend their time better in better, more advantageous ways. And I think it was one of the reasons why the church eventually it was damaged in the quake and fire, but they rebuilt it. But then I think it was one of the reasons why they decided to move westward, first to near Van, westward, yes, first to near Van Ness, and then of course to the amazing modernist building on the hill further that way. I loved the early Jesuits who founded the University of San Francisco and also founded Mary's Hospital. The clarity of their disgust for the sin and vice in the city was sort of, you'd read it and you'd be like, that's good writing. I mean, I don't really sort of subscribe to all that, but what a powerful piece of writing.
You can get your passions in lots of different ways. So you wrote about the Rosicrucian Museum, which I know, and there's a great outdoor Senate game. You know, the people have outdoor chess games. They have an outdoor Senate game. So about just as big. Senate is a game that's been played in ancient Egypt for like 4,000 years or something like that. You can see it in the hieroglyphs. So why don't you tell about, this is the best Egyptian collection this side of the Mississippi, as far as I heard, right?
Yeah, it's quite fascinating. Another collector. There's a lot of collectors. Yeah, and he started collecting them before they became very expensive. And gosh, I'd have to look up the year. But the one of the coolest things is they let kids who are in like junior high school sleep overnight, and because they have these Egyptian artifacts and also you know, coffins, and so they get to sleep overnight in that scary place. Another thing for Halloween.
Night at the museum.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Wow. It's a real night at the museum.
Yeah. Well, they have mummies.
They have mummies. Yeah. Sorry.
Mummies and the coffins. Yeah, they don't let them sleep in the coffins, I'm sure.
No.
But they do have recreated a temple underground. You know, you step down and you go down into it, and it's like a tomb.
Yes.
It's not quite as cool as being in Luxor in Egypt, but it's not too bad. Not too bad a substitute.
It's in San Jose, Santa Clara?
San Jose, yeah. San Jose. It's right in San Jose.
And they have a beautiful garden anybody can go to, and they're very serious about part of their religion, where if you get very serious about it, that you can like levitate things, and it is rather fascinating.
A little like the Masons, there's a lot of levels.
Yes.
You can go up, you can learn hieroglyphs there.
Yeah,
you know, Egyptian hieroglyphs.
Yeah,
and there's they have five or six buildings in the Egyptian style right there. It's quite nice. It's not only nice for children; it's nice for anybody interested in Egypt stuff.
Yeah,
It could have been done very kitschily, but it's actually done pretty nicely.
And anyone can visit. Yeah,
yeah.
It's
not restricted to Egyptians.
Religious. Yeah.
Ancient Egyptians.
Yeah.
So you wrote about the oldest club, Olympic Club, and you quoted Kevin Starr, who was a friend of mine. How many knew Kevin, the historian? He was really quite a great character. So, but you started with the Kevin Starr quote, which I thought was great about the Olympic Club. Sorry,
I'm just looking it up. Yeah, he wrote and spoke really well about the club. Mm-hmm. Do you have the?
I have without quoting, I can paraphrase it, though.
Oh, good.
he said that you could write most of California history just using the members of the Olympic Club.
Yeah.
They were so influential.
You look down the list, and it would have a lot of literary people. It would have Earl Warren going from obviously governor and then Supreme Court justice, and it just was although founded as a real athletic club by these German Americans, both of them artists, but they were society painters, so they knew the people to bring in, they were part of, I guess, after Napoleon defeated Germany in the Battle of Jena, the Germans thought, we're going to pump ourselves up. Like, this is absurd. And so there was a huge physical fitness movement. And then they came over here and started that there. And one thing that interested me was their ability to scout talent. So they've got all these very highfalutin members, but they spot the person, Jim Corbett, Gentleman Jim, who became the world's boxing champion, and they had good coaches. And Gentleman Jim not only was the world's boxing champion, but he was the first person who would, between rounds, bounce up and down, allegedly. They had the person who invented the hook shot. The hook shot was from there, and basketball wouldn't be the same without that. An amazing shot putter who wouldn't bow down to the British Royals in the Olympics, or he wouldn't lower the flag to the British Royals in the 1904 Olympics. And the other innovation was bringing the front crawl to it needs the motion, you know, to America. So a social club, one with literary pretensions. Mark Twain is there. All these amazing Californians, but then also a real eye for talent. And so that's my rather long-winded answer.
No, that was great. That was great. That's the Olympic Club, and we'll take Mark Twain and we'll bring him over here.
Interesting.
Because you wrote about the training of jumping frogs.
Oh, yes. Well,
you can actually get a trainer to train your frog.
Yeah.
I know that we get trainers for our children so that they can be good sports people.
Yeah. It is amazing. Well, I don't know, a lot of people don't realize Mark Twain was kind of down on his luck, and he needed to make some money. And what really made his money was when he wrote The Jumping Frog of Calaveras County. Is that, you know, I'm trying to remember from. But he was up there staying in a shack. But now, of course, they...
He went there to escape the police.
Is that true?
Because he was writing for the San Francisco papers, and he was very critical of how they treated the Chinese people.
Yes, he did stand up.
So they were very upset with him. So he got out of town for a couple of months.
I did not know that's how
he ended up in there.
But I knew he was writing here, and I knew he stood up for them. Yeah, interesting. But now up at Angels Camp, of course, it's their biggest deal of the year, and they have frog spas. And they claim that the frogs are lazy on purpose because they want to get back to the spa where they massage their legs. And they have cold water. And they have special food for them. And then whoever wins it, it's like the Hollywood Walk of Fame. They get this big, you know, stone in the Angels Camp on the sidewalk that says that they won the contest. So, yeah, it's quite the big deal up there and quite the tourist attraction. And
lots of money exchanges hands and gambling on the frogs.
Yes. And then they have
not
all
quite
these,
as much as the Super Bowl, but
yeah,
it's getting close.
Secret tips about how to get them to go farther, and they talk to them, and they it's.
But you're not allowed to take the tip from the story itself as to how to win. In the story itself, the whole thing that made the story was he tells this very laconically about the frog, and one guy takes a shot from a gun and loads it up into his competitor frog so that the frog can't jump far enough.
Yes, true.
That's what
the weight handicap.
Yeah, true.
It's the opposite of steroids, right? Exactly.
Yeah, it was over a long night at a bar that he heard that story.
Undoubtedly,
yes.
All right. So let's go back to oldest San Francisco. And you wrote about the Bank of America and how it got started. And, you know, of course, the Bank of America and Wells Fargo are the two big San Francisco banks. They both have very interesting histories. And I don't know, is Wells Fargo still headquartered here? But
yes, it is.
But Bank of America has now been long gone and made a big difference in San Francisco's. You could say that San Francisco, because the Bank of America left and the funding left, that all of this, you know, the private funding got a big start because of that.
Fair enough,
So that a lot of Silicon Valley banks, a lot of Silicon Valley companies that wanted to get funding didn't have as many people to go to.
Fair enough, yeah. And
I'll tell you one secret. There's a secret about California that never happened. Secret about San Francisco that never happened. The big Chinese bank in about 2002 had a big plan to open up a bank here with billions of dollars to fund Silicon Valley things. But I guess they decided it wouldn't work because nobody would trust them, that they wouldn't steal the information from the companies that they lent the money to. But they got very close because Bank of America had left, the headquarters had left, and was like a something missing in the piece here.
Nature abhors a vacuum, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. But they didn't want the Chinese to come in anyway.
Yeah, well, I guess in the absence of banks that want specific returns at specific times.
Right.
We've had these other banks, which have maybe helped fuel this incredible thing we've lived through. But
right.
But actually, I learned about A.P. Giannini from Ruth, her book, Secret San Francisco. This, and probably you know the outlines of his story. Sort of the end of it, he's the basis for the character in It's a Wonderful Life, the banker who changes things around him. And he got his start as a vegetable and fruit merchant on the wharfs in San Francisco, did well, and then got into a small bank. And then it wasn't courageous enough, so he started his own bank, the Bank of Italy, which would go on to become the Bank of America, biggest bank in the world. But one thing he did is right after the earthquake and fire, he was the only one who still had cash on hand. A lot of the other banks had it in their vault, but it was... And I can't believe this is true, but it's what I read everywhere. It was too hot to open the vaults. And he had his, either he'd taken it across the bay or down the peninsula, and he set up boards on barrels on the waterfront and started to make loans based on trust. But you were talking about this earlier, based on that quick decision. Is this person going to repay me? And he had a very good return on those. And then founds the Bank of America. The old head office is a beautiful building there now with the private club at the top. But the bets he made in the 30s were the Golden Gate Bridge, The wine industry, Walt Disney's first animated feature, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, with the terrifying Wicked, and also later Hewlett Packard. So he just kept on making amazing bets, and it's become one of the biggest banks in the world. And thank you for putting me onto that story, Ruth.
Well, and he was the first person to start branch banking before you had to go to a big city to go to a bank. And he said, no, we should have it out in the smaller places, the suburbs. I don't know what they called them back then, but he was the first one to do that.
And he had branches in different languages, branches where women could go. So a very innovative San Franciscan.
Yeah.
So,
well, I was very happy to see, Ruth, that you covered the double-decker bus in Half Moon Bay, because I've gone by that many times. Now, why don't you tell where that came from? Why do we have a London bus?
Yes.
In
Half Moon Bay,
California.
If you're going to go down to the Half Moon Bay Pumpkin Festival, well, be prepared for traffic. But if you do, stop by Cameron's Pub. This gentleman named Cameron started a very English pub there, and you can't miss it. There's a big red double-decker bus out in front. And he has, he has a pillory there. He has a red phone booth. And you go inside, and he has a collection of beer cans he's had ever since he was, I think even before he could drink, along the wall. And he has a bed and breakfast, but he calls it a bed and beverage. He calls it B&B, bed and breakfast. But you can also go camping there. He's expanded now like crazy. You can go camping there. He's got other places you can stay. But yeah, it's a very fun place. And he has a section where they sell, you know, very traditional British food you might not be able to find here, English food. It's a fun spot.
All right, before we do the special test for everybody, the quiz.
You were warned.
I had one last question for you. The background information, the background information on the Exploratorium, I found fascinating that it was founded by Oppenheimer's brother.
Yeah.
Who had worked, how many of you have seen the movie Oppenheimer? Mm. Quite a few people probably.
Wow.
So his brother is in the movie. But then say what he did later, because after working on his brother's project on the atomic bomb.
Yeah, he was very helpful. And then he became a professor in Madison, but was drummed out of there in the Red Scare in the McCarthyist period, not by McCarthy, and came back here and brilliant, both brothers, very brilliant, came back here, started to teach high school, and then founded the Exploratorium, this idea of hands-on science learning, and the docents, these marvelously cool and geeky high school students who lead you through it. And so that was his idea. The idea has moved since then, but I loved that he took this terrible treatment and his passion for knowledge and for scientific learning and for bringing a new generation to it was such that he didn't. He just kept. he worked on founding the Exploratorium. So
that's fascinating.
How many people knew that Oppenheimer was involved with the Exploratorium?
A couple people.
Oh, that's great.
We got a smart crowd.
That's the kind of secret stuff around here. I thought, which is very interesting, that are part of the history of so many institutions that we know in San Francisco. So that was great. There's lots more information in the books.
Thank you.
So let's do the quiz.
Okay. Let's see.
Okay.
We have somebody who's going to help. Okay. All right.
Oh, yes.
We're going to distribute them.
Before you do that, Matthew, we're going to do a little
So preview. These are our prizes.
We're going to do a prize preview first.
Oh, okay.
Just to get you warmed up. does anybody know where this lovely place is located? Of course you do.
Yes,
that is correct. And Jack London State Historic Park in Glen Ellen in Sonoma County. To me, the most interesting thing about it, maybe because I grew up in Iowa and my dad was a manager of a meat manufacturing plant, it's home to the Pig Palace. Jack London said that he worked. He was actually the first writer to make $1 million in his lifetime. He wrote every day, but he said he wrote to pay for his beauty ranch. And that was this, you know, Jack London, Call of the Wild, The White Fang, but, he didn't know anything about farming, but he decided to be a farmer. So the neighbors all laughed at him. He had all these wild ideas until he built his pig palace. He built a stone structure where the pigs, they were in a circle, and each pig had their own, it's a very expensive pig pen, they each had their own little place to stay, and they had a courtyard, a roof sleeping area. They had bars in there so that sometimes the female pigs would fall asleep and kill their babies by mistake. So they didn't because of that. The San Francisco newspaper, the Palace Hotel had just opened, and so they called it the Pig Palace because $3,000 was what it cost in 1900.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know what that would be today, but a lot of money. But when the cholera epidemic happened, all of the neighboring farmers lost their pigs. They all died. But his pigs were saved because he had a little tray of disinfectant that they had to walk through when they came out of their little sleeping places, and they all lived. So he turned out to be right about that one.
So that we have a prize is a pass there. And the other one, I don't know if you know who this is. You probably don't, but it's Domingo Ghirardelli. He's in the chocolatier, oldest chocolate company. And he's in the National Gallery with the distinguished likes of Mark Twain, Henry James, and Willa Cather. So we have chocolate bags for those of you who nail this quiz.
For the winners.
For the winners. So here we go.
Yeah. So, oh, they're coming. They're coming. He's Matthew's. He's coming.
No. Well, you're gonna write it down. Write it down,
and then we'll ask.
Then we'll expect you to tell honestly that you.
Yeah, don't look at your phones. You're on the honor system here.
It's an honor system.
But we're gonna see if we can stump you. Should we wait till they?
Until they can answer.
Get passed out. Okay.
All right.
We shouldn't have stopped you. Sorry, Matthew.
Yeah, exactly. I'll take some and do the. Okay. Go ahead.
Where is Bank of America headquartered now?
North Carolina.
Yeah.
Why did they leave the city?
It was bought by a big North Carolina bank.
It's good to have a mergers and acquisitions distinguished mergers and acquisitions lawyer in the room.
Got some? You got some? Passing around. Take some. Want to take the quiz? Sure.
We're expecting a lot of you. I had people who got 0 and 1 out of 10 at the last quiz I did. So we're hoping for more than.
Oh,
zero.
I think these guys are going to get. I think we're a lot of tens.
This is the Commonwealth Club.
Yeah, I think they're going to have a lot of tens here. A lot of tens.
Anybody else want one? Okay.
Pencils.
We need pencils.
Pencils.
Oh, he needs a pencil, Matthew.
You don't need.
Sorry.
You don't need pencils every minute. You can share. So if we run out, everybody got a
people
pencil and a quiz sheet?
They need pencils.
Yep. Okay, so we'll finish up this last area over here, and then we're ready to go.
Okay.
Matthew, no such thing as a free ticket.
And, you know, just while we're waiting for it to be finished, once we finish this, we'll have a Q&A, and I'll bring this around so that you can ask the question into the microphone for the recording purposes.
So, first of all, what city was once named Hollywood North? A, Sacramento, B, Benicia, or C, Niles Canyon?
Don't say it out loud.
Oh, no, that's okay. We thought we'd explain as we go along.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. That's all right.
That'll ruin their ability to say how many they got, right?
It will.
Okay, but, so let's not give the answers.
Until, okay.
Okay. All right.
We'll give the answers at the end.
Okay.
How many are there?
The 10. The second one is, what local political figure was given a buffalo for her birthday and promptly regifted it to Golden Gate Park? Dianne Feinstein, Nancy Pelosi, or Eleni Kounoulakis?
Who cares?
Now, remember, when anybody says the answer, they're just trying to mislead you.
That's right.
Okay, Ruth?
What museum in a very quiet neighborhood has performances with aerial dancers, opera singers, and harpsichord players in its backyard? Is it A, Greg Angelo Museum in San Francisco, B, Annie Glass Gallery in Santa Cruz, or C, the Ringling Circus exhibit in Solana Beach? Don't say the answer.
Okay. Number four, how did authorities finally catch the stagecoach robber Black Bart? A, his mistress turned him in. B, through a handkerchief he left behind. C, he tried to cash a stolen check. This is the robber who had 28 successful stagecoach robberies.
And I loved your story about why he was mad at them. He was mad at Wells Fargo for
yes.
He had a personal grudge that made him do this, but we won't tell about that.
Okay.
Let's go to the question.
Okay, right. Next one.
What is California's underground resort? Is it A, Maryland's Cave in Palm Springs, B, Forest Air in Fresno, or C, the hidden attraction in Hollywood?
And so the next one is, what is the name of the ship on San Francisco's oldest public square? The Balcluda, USS Portsmouth, or the Hispaniola?
Where is the only perfume museum in the country? Is it A, San Francisco, B, Berkeley, or C, Lake Tahoe?
Okay, number 8. The first runner to wear a costume in Beta Breakers dressed up as A, Teddy Roosevelt, B, Judy Garland, C, Captain Kidd.
What is the alive cemetery in California? Hollywood Forever Cemetery, Cypress Lawn in Colma, or Evergreen Memorial Park in Del Mar?
Last one. Which of these figures has his memorial at the San Francisco Columbarium, not down in Colma, the city of the dead? William Randolph Hearst, Harvey Milk, or Wyatt Earp?
All right.
Okay.
So everybody had a chance to write down their choices?
Yep.
All right. Now we're going to allow you to self-correct. So go ahead. Give the answers, and let's see how... We'll just take a show of hands of how many got 10, how many got 9, how many...
Perfect.
Okay.
How's
right.
that?
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Well, the first one, some people said this out loud, but believe it or not, Niles Canyon was once known as Hollywood North. Now it's part of Fremont, but because movie studio SNA, they had a base there, and it's where Charlie Chaplin became famous, directing and starring in The Tramp. And today you can still see silent movies there with live music at the Edison Theater, and it's the same place that premiered Chaplin's movies, and also Bronco Billy Anderson, who was the first cowboy Western star. And he's actually best known for discovering Charlie Chaplin and bringing him out there. But Charlie Chaplin couldn't wait to get out of there and go back to L.A.
And those who said Dianne Feinstein were right. Her husband gave it to her as an unusual birthday present. She arrived home. They were grazing on the range in the back. She said, "That's great. There's a bison paddock in Golden Gate Park. Let's take them over." So.
She still stayed married to him.
But okay. You get the woman who has everything. So.
Let's see. And the museum. That is the Greg Angelo Museum in San Francisco. If you haven't been there, it's fascinating. It's near St. Francis Woods. And Greg Angelo is his name, and he has his artist friends that decorated his home with a different theme for each one. There's one with shoes on the ceiling. There's a spaceship. There's an aquarium bathroom. But you can tour the home, but also outside. He has, it's kind of Cirque du Soleil Alice in Wonderland shows. It's wild. It's really fun.
It's super cool. So authorities caught Black Bart through the handkerchief. They went to 27 different laundries in San Francisco and found the laundering mark. He would leave poems behind at the scene of some of his heists, and so that's how they caught him.
Huh. And then number 5, the underground resort is Forest Air in Fresno. An Italian immigrant named Forest Air. He was trying to escape the heat, and so he built an underground home just using a pickaxe and a shovel. And he built his home, and then he built a resort. It was quite involved. Unfortunately, he died before the resort could open. Died alone, can you imagine? He had a fiancée, but she did not want to be a mole person, apparently. But you can tour the home now. It's got an aquarium. It's got a grotto. It's got an outdoor bathtub. It's a ballroom. It's pretty fascinating.
This was before The Hobbit was written, right?
Yeah.
And so the ship, as many of you will know, what do you guys think is the ship on that square?
Bacala.
This is a bit of a trick question because it's called Portsmouth Square, but it's the Hispaniola. Robert Louis Stevenson spent a lot of time there. He was waiting for his lover to get out of her marriage, and he was wandering around, and they put up the ship in Treasure Island, a memorial to his time there. And I'd never read it, and so read it after this, which was fun.
Huh.
I thought he was a children's literature writer, right?
Stevenson?
Yeah.
I very high adventure and suitable for children.
Right.
I don't know that Jekyll and Hyde, probably children's too.
Yeah, yeah.
And Treasure Island is the, of course.
So what's he doing waiting for a mistress? That's
oh.
I guess he didn't get canceled.
No, he did not get canceled.
Yes. Oh. Yes.
That's
he
right.
was, but he still, you know. This was the 19th century.
It was.
Yeah. So where did you guys think the only perfume museum in the country is? San Francisco? Berkeley? Tahoe? It's actually Berkeley. Yes. It's the Aftel Archive of Curious Scents. It's fascinating. What the most fascinating thing to me is that they sell a whale poop scent called Ambergris, which is very rare, very expensive, and very popular. People buy a lot of it, but it's an interactive museum. You smell more than 300 essences, and there's a color wheel that you spin around and find out about various notes. And it's fun. It's right next to Alice. Yes,
Chez Panisse.
It's right next to Chez Panisse, which is kind of funny. It's because it smells anyway.
Smells and sense. Costumes go back a ways with Beta Breakers to the 1940. What do you think the first runner to dress in costume wore? Captain Kidd. It was a pirate and yeah, again, women weren't allowed to race until 1971. But one enterprising woman, the girlfriend of a competitor, her name was Barbara. She put in her name as Bobby. And there was some pursuit of her in the early part of the race, but she was quite fast. And so she raced the whole thing in the late 30s. So.
Huh. Yeah. Anybody know where the Alive Cemetery is? Any guesses? Or anybody know? Sorry? No, it's actually Hollywood Forever Cemetery. They have an outdoor movie theater. They have yoga by a reflecting pool. They have peacocks. They have a cat caretaker for all the cats that wander. And if you go there, you have to get a tour by Carrie Bible. She did not make that name up. Her name is Carrie Bible. And she takes you to the grave sites of all the famous people, Cecil B. DeMille, Andy Rooney, Judy Garland, Hattie McDaniel. And it's really a fascinating tour.
I heard Hattie McDaniel said, "I played everything but the harp." Who's not buried in who is buried in San Francisco, or whose memorial is in San Francisco? Is it William Randolph Hearst, or is it Harvey Milk, or is it Wyatt Earp? Harvey Milk, well done. Yeah. And they kept his ashes secret because they felt they might be violated more, but there's a memorial, a plaque for him at the Columbarium. So that's our quiz.
That's it.
Okay, so now you're all being honest, I'm sure. How many got all 10 right? Okay.
Nobody?
I thought it was a good quiz.
Whoa.
Okay, how many got 9 right?
What?
Nobody.
I'm shocked.
How many got 8 right? There you go.
Oh, right.
You're the winner. Okay, so.
I'm shocked. I thought for sure you guys would.
Anybody that likes chocolate, we're going to expect a lot of 7s here.
And a Jack London Park pass.
Okay, now your honesty is being tested. How many got 7 right? You got 8 right.
7?
She got 7. Yay!
1, 2, and 3. Okay, 3 people got 7 right.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Well, come up, and we'll give you the prizes then.
Okay. Great. And is that the end of our prizes? 3.
That's the end of the yeah.
Okay. Great. Yeah. All right. So we'll just ask. So how many got 6 right? Now we're starting to get someplace.
Great,
5.
Great.
Very nice. 4. Don't have to admit about 3, 2, or 1. So we're doing those. All right. So it's time to ask questions of Ruth and Alex. So who would like to ask a question? We're going to go with the winner first. If you have a question, you have a question? Okay. No question. Who would like to ask a question? Great.
Yeah, my question is directed at Ruth, but it really could be for both of you. How did you go about your research for these books, like finding out all these crazy, obscure things and then kind of weaning out, I'm sure you had too much information, selecting what you're ultimately going to include?
I did a lot for both books on social media and said, this is what I'm writing about. Can you tell me, quirky things. And then I also went to the tourism boards. I also have 9 siblings, not 10 like George, but they helped me a lot too. It's like, oh, okay, I got one in San Diego. I can go there. I got one there. So it was a lot of online and books. I would get different books about quirky things in the state, and that helped a lot too. And then you talk to one person, they tell you another thing you didn't know about. And then even after the book, I found more things out that I couldn't include because it was already done. Oh, I did. Me?
Ruth?
I've never had a drink in my life. I don't know where you got that idea.
And for me, it was the San Francisco History Room and the Art Institute's, which is under threat, as we all know. Their librarian was this incredible resource of, he knew about the suicide hotline founded by the he knew about all sorts of things. So sometimes you find one person, right? And,
yeah.
And then it's you're off. You know?
Yes. And sometimes it was bartenders. They know a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
You're starting to become inconsistent, Ruth.
Me?
Yeah. But not in the book. Next question.
Oh. I just wanted to ask, are there any great stories that you wanted to include but ultimately had to cut for either of you?
For me, the Art Institute was one that the publisher only wanted things that were existing. And at the time I was writing, the deal with the University of San Francisco had fallen apart. So you know how their artists put California on the map, how Annie Leibovitz is there taking photos for Rolling Stone in the 60s, and Dorothea Lange is teaching about how to photograph people in ways that keep their dignity and that expose their socioeconomic situation. And so and the building so beautiful. So that was when I was sad to go. Although I read that some of Steve Jobs's money is part of a consortium that might help the art school come back. So I would be very happy, although it's not in the book, for it to come back. But that one I was sad to see go.
Yeah, I had a couple of things I couldn't do because it was a pandemic. I really wanted to go to the Magic Theater down in L.A., but it was shut down because of pandemic. And then also the biggest Star Wars collection I believe it's in Petaluma, and I couldn't go there because a lot of my things had to be outdoors because of the pandemic.
So I'm going to ask a question for Spencer Campbell, who works here, because he went to the Museum of International Propaganda.
Oh, yes.
And told me about it, and I know you included it in your book.
Yes.
He always is telling people that they should go. He loves it.
Yes.
So why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's in my book, and then I just saw it in the Chronicle the other day. I'm like, oh, that is fascinating. Yeah, it's very small, free. They take donations, but it has propaganda, everything from current era to all different countries, China, America, but everywhere, Russia, and they sometimes have people that will drop things off at their door that are like Nazi memorabilia things. Like they had an ashtray that they just found it outside their door. Somebody was like, I don't want this. So it's very curious and unusual, and it's right in San Rafael, right downtown. Yeah. Yes, they do. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
They collected. Yeah. She mentioned that people who went to North Korea collected some stuff and brought it over. That propaganda is called propaganda, but at the time, I mean, I was in the Soviet Union in 1973, and you could for 2 or 3 cents, you could buy posters of almost any of the stuff that they'd had around because they made it so that people would decorate their homes with it.
Yeah.
You know, instead of putting up pinups.
Do we know how many seafaring vessels are buried under San Francisco?
I do not. There was just an article, I think, in the Chronicle about somebody did a map of it, or SF Gate, I'm not sure, but I don't personally know.
Probably you know about our downtown being on landfill on top of so many vessels abandoned, and no, I do not know how many.
I don't know. But they keep... But they keep discovering it when they do work, when they have to dig up the street. So they're like, oh, here's another ship.
Yes, Mark.
Did they mention what was the underground city or the city that was...
Oh. Yeah, that was Sacramento, actually. They had big flooding back, and Mark Twain lived up there and had some funny quotes about how I was on the second floor, and now I'm on the first floor. so, yeah, with the flooding, they have houses underneath, and you can take a tour and see them underground. They just built on top of it. And, in fact, they had to elect the governor, I believe it was. He had to go to his inauguration, and they had to put him in a rowboat. They couldn't get him there any other way because the flooding was so bad up there.
Is 73.
Thank you.
Yeah, because I saw the map the other day, and then it actually lists all 73 of them.
Oh, so.
Amazing!
Thanks.
Amazing.
That is amazing. 73. Yeah.
Wow. The people were so eager to go to the gold rush that they just came in their ships and left the ships behind.
Yeah,
yeah, they did.
And they used them for all kinds of other things, mainly for bars for a while.
Yes, yes.
But after a while, they rotted, and then they all went under. Right.
Yeah.
So,
well, one of them's still a bar. The
one of them is still a bar, right?
Yeah.
Old Ship Saloon.
Yes. Yeah, the Old Ship Saloon. Yeah.
All right, sure, of course.
Does anyone know whatever happened to the old Ham's beer, display thing that used to be up there?
Uh-huh.
No, no. Oh.
Do you know?
No.
Oh. No. No.
All right, well, we have time for one more question. Who'd like to ask the last question? It's going to be the last secret. It's going to be the oldest question. No.
So what's the oldest nude beach?
You mean, no, wait a minute. I think what he meant was, what's the nude beach that allows the oldest people to go to? Is that what you meant?
I don't know, but it was part of my introduction to San Francisco. Sort of, I was straight-laced, but learning that I wasn't straight, and a friend took me to an old and it was cool.
Baker Beach.
Yeah, it was one end of Baker. Does anyone know the answer to the oldest nude beach?
Baker,
or the nude beach that has the oldest
clientele. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming. And Ruth,
thank you. Oh,
Alex,
thanks.
That was a wonderful tour through California.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you very much.
And so ends another event of the Commonwealth Club in its 121st year of enlightened discussion. Thanks a lot for joining us. It's really nice to have a nice crowd here.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Hear thousands of our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. If you like what you've heard, please consider supporting our work and help us bring 500 programs a year to listeners like you. Go to commonwealthclub.org/donate. Think your way around the world with our travel programs to exciting domestic and international destinations. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live at our events. Thank you for listening and for your support.